I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Veerman. Here's a secret, you can pass it around. Here's a secret, you can pass it around. My head in the clouds, hands and feet on the ground. Here's a secret, you can pass it around. All right. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike. We got Max. We got Shane. We're all together here in the same room, bringing you another episode of your favorite podcast, The Best Hang. Fellas, what is going on? Lots have been happening. There was a Grey Cup in this country, which is our Super Bowl for any of our American listeners or maybe European listeners.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of stuff. I mean, I'm home from the road, so I can hang out with you guys a lot more often, which I'm very, very excited about.
Do you watch that Grey Cup?
I watched the halftime show.
How was it?
Well, I don't know if I'm the most objective viewer because I just compared it to what we did. Mm-hmm. So I was like, not as good. No, I thought it was great. I mean, the fact that the Grey Cup got Green Day was fucking awesome. Like, you know,
they caught them in an album cycle, right?
Yeah, that's like the Canadian thing where it's just like you're just hoping that a big dog cares about you. And we know the people at Tim Hortons Field. We know the Ticats. We know the CFL people. And we're just so happy for them, you know, because that was like a huge get.
Yeah.
And also within our band, like we're real Green Day fans, especially Nick and Tim. Actually, I think everybody. I don't know if I'm the biggest Green Day fan, but the other four guys love Green Day.
Like you like the three main hits. When I come around.
Basket case. You know what's so funny? For graduation, like the prom in high school.
Yeah.
I went, my girlfriend in high school was older than me, so I went to the prom the year before. And they announced that the final song.
Like, what was your secret to get an older lady?
You know what? I don't know what it was. She was the student council president, and next year I was the student council president. Mm. Oh. So it was kind of like a Bill and Hillary situation, I suppose. That we both
were people crying foul though that you got in because of her.
You know, no one ran against me.
Okay, that's key.
Yeah. No one really cared. There's a lot of apathy in my school. It was kind of good. It wasn't like a
that
classic.
Was the platform you ran on. We're going to end apathy.
I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
But cool. For her prom. They announced, like, guys, the official prom song of the year is
Good Riddance.
Time of Your Life. Or no.
It's called Good Riddance.
Good Riddance. Green Day. We're like, woo. And then we look at the DJ. DJ's like, I don't have it.
Oh, no.
And so then
we grabbed an acoustic guitar.
No, yeah, right. And Mike Veerman shows up. Like, I got this.
I'll do it. I've been waiting for this moment.
And then so we all kind of like awkwardly kind of like, from what I recall, like stood in a big circle arm in arm and we all tried to sing the lyrics. And I don't know if everybody like got as far as like, oh, you know, goodness. Verse 2. Anyway, whatever. That's like awkward for everybody, but no one seemed to mind too much. Next year, where I'm the president of the student council, it's my prom. And like, okay.
Were you still with the girl?
Yeah, she came. Did she come back from, because she was at McMaster. Mm. I think she came back from my prom. Yeah, I think she did. And
you
again,
a McMaster woman come to a high school prom?
Well, it was her alma mater.
Were you nervous when she went away to like college or university because like, you know, there was going to be uni guys there, or did you just have sort of blind confidence?
Blind confidence. I don't think I was ever particularly worried about it. That never really even crossed my mind. Impressive. I don't think. I think I did become aware of the concept of turkey dump. Somebody mentioned that. Like, you were a big turkey dump. I'm like, what's the turkey dump? Do you guys know what the turkey dump is?
I have no idea.
Turkey dump is getting dumped for Thanksgiving. So once your college girlfriend returns and she's found a new guy, dumps
that's
you.
When you're getting dumped.
That's when you're
and
getting dumped.
And then she goes back to school to hang out with the big boys.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen to you.
Didn't happen for me. But anyway, so then prom comes around for me. Okay, they announce, what's the big prom song of the year? Second year in a row, Good Riddance. We have the same DJ. Still doesn't have the song.
He didn't get it together.
And then it was even worse than the sing-along was worse than the year before.
Wow.
But yeah, I like Green Day. And we're kind of, I think, in this era of like how rock stars age. Everybody's just looking at like who is holding up, who looks bad, who looks good. I think Green Day looks pretty good.
There was a lot of talk. Mm. So I went to the game. Yeah. I went, or the first half anyway. I saw the halftime show. I'm a Green Day enjoyer. I wouldn't say I'm a hardcore fan, but I enjoy Green Day quite a bit. I actually seen them live. My brother, I got free tickets years ago, like 2000 and I don't know. You know, sometimes bands, like depending on the cycle or the tour or the general interest, like it's like, oh, Green Day are playing like Cops Coliseum. And there just happens to be tickets floating around. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's like.
It was like that with Taylor Swift a few years ago.
You were saying that.
I just
that,
got free tickets. Lucy went. Like, it was easy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Impossible. Yeah. On the 1989, the Reputation Tour just before pandemic, like, she couldn't do two nights at that Skydome.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's just wild.
That's
that things
so
changed.
Crazy.
So, Green Day was on one of these sort of cycles where there's tickets. And I was like, my brother and I were like, let's go. We'll have a laugh. So, I've seen them live before. But anyway. Grey Cup was it was an experience, but there's a lot of talk in our section. I was actually with Three Arkells, so I went with Mike D. So DZ went in our little group when he got some tickets, I believe, courtesy of Manager Ash over there who's waving. But then in our section around us was also Tim, drummer of Arkells, with I think a buddy or a couple pals, and then Nick was there with his brother and there with some friends as well. So it was like we were all kind of within two rows of each other and like, hey, what's up, blah blah blah, all that stuff. And I don't know how much. Like, would they be into the game, like Nick and Tim?
Probably not.
Yeah, like, I didn't know who was in the actual game. I feel terrible because there's probably people listening to this who are,
it's
like,
the
Alouettes huge.
And the Blue Bombers.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know how, like, sometimes you'll talk about an experience like this and, like, people that, like, love the CFL are like, oh, I would kill to go to a Grey Cup in Hamilton. I didn't even know till the day before. My brother and I were together, and he was the one that told me who was in the game. But the talk in our row was Billy Joel wearing a wig?
Oh, yeah, that was in
he
our...
He just dyes his hair.
I think he just dyes
his
hair.
He still has that great full head of hair.
I think he does.
Yeah.
It's got, like, a perfect fluff to it. Yeah. Like, it's, it's really, looks good.
Yeah.
It makes him look young. I think that's the key to his youthful look, though.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Even though he's, what, like 50? I don't know how
he's
old.
He's 50, but he always looked young, though.
Yes.
When he was 40, he looked 25.
Totally.
I do sometimes think, though, it's like with these rock and roll gods that come from a particular like genre and time to hold that up is hard because it's like you kind of got to be like ripped and sort of like because the bass player is still kind of ripped and he has the tattoos and he has that pompadour haircut.
He does not look young though. We saw him walking around in Toronto.
Me, Myers, and Shane were having lunch on Friday and he walked by.
I know, but and that's why it kind of makes it hard. It's like it's kind of best to only do something that ages well because otherwise it's just tough. I think I'll age great.
Has this been on your mind? It's the second time in two pods now you've brought up how bands look as they
age. Is it? What did I say last time?
Oh, just that you were like, how ripped Tim and Nick are.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then you
yeah.
said, we all look great. Like you threw yourself in with them.
Yeah. It's, but Springsteen has aged great.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he never goes away though. So you don't really notice him aging as much. If I was to look at Springsteen, I'd say he's 75.
Yeah, he definitely kind of looks that old.
If you see, like, let's say no one's met you before in their life, they know nothing about you. At a glance, how old do people guess you are?
Great question. I think I'm 30. They think I'm about 35.
Wow. Okay. I thought you'd say 30.
No. I think they think I'm like, early to mid 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody thinks I'm in my late 30s, which I'm about to be. So,
wow.
You know, 37 next week.
The Rolling Stones have looked old since like 1988.
Yeah.
So they kind of benefit from that. It's not drastic how old they look now that they're touring when they're 80.
Uh-huh.
Because they've sort of looked like that since the 80s comeback, Paul, I find, is looking old. I was watching some clips of it. He's on tour right now. And I love, obviously, Paul McCartney. I've seen him live twice. But I was watching some clips of him and I'm just like, oh, I'm feeling his age.
I think,
isn't he 90 though? Paul's looking old, man.
How do I explain this? He didn't feel like a guy in his 80s out on tour until this most recent incarnation.
He doesn't have that Chevy Chase, like, I'm an old
good
man
brain.
Now, all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's not confused and shit.
Once you're in your, like, 70s, it's not even about how you look anymore, because there's no hiding that you're old. It's how cognitive, like, how's your brain cognition?
Yeah. I think Nick has a theory that all these guys just end up looking like old ladies. Like he thinks that Paul McCartney looks like a nice little old lady. Like,
of course,
especially the way he does his hair and stuff.
That's
like
a
that.
Real theory. Yeah.
Yeah,
he,
yeah.
having big hair, I think, is weird for an older man.
Mm-hmm. I think about Ringo sometimes, who, by the way, I saw him. He's 80. He's 2 years older than Paul, I think, or a year older than Paul. Yeah. But we saw him a couple years ago, and he was like bouncing around that stage like crazy. Paul just felt, I don't know, I was watching some clips like last week, and I was like, oh, I'm feeling, he's just feeling a little slower and like a grandpa up there, whereas he didn't feel like a grandpa previously. Maybe just a rough day, but I always think about Ringo's like dark beard and dark hair. And I'm like, this old guy, he's got all the money in the world, and he's still sitting down, I don't know, every couple weeks to like get someone to dye his shit.
What would you guys do for self-improvement as you age?
Oh.
Like Botox, hair dye.
No, I'm out on the game. And that's tough, because my dad, as he got
on the game, he's like, clearly, we're in the elevator today. Mike's like, I'm like, where are the shoes from, Mike? He's like, I don't know. Nanica just picked it up for me.
Those are nice. I was going to ask about those.
Yeah, but he has no idea. He's out on the game.
I'm out of the game.
Because he's wearing a weird hat right now.
No, he said I look like one of the guys from the Insurrection. I'm just wearing like a trapper cap or whatever they're called.
But he's wearing a hoodie from 5 years ago, fully charged.
It's a Kyle Lowry All-Star campaign shirt.
This is a work day. If you go out, you have, your nice denim black t-shirt, jacket. Yeah. Your denim black jacket.
I do, but as far as like
your hair routine,
some Pantene Pro V. I truly
rock with it. Rock to be or what is the thing?
Yeah, got to be mine.
That's
my new hack.
That was really good.
I would say that it's like I'm out of the game as far as like I'm not like. Listen, I'd like to keep sort of a healthy appearance, but I would never get like injections or like.
But you have a skincare routine.
I do. I've been moisturizing. About. I've been moisturizing with. Oh, wow. Am I blanking on this? This is like my key, my secret. I've been doing this for like 15 years.
Should we beep it?
No. Oh, God. How am I blanking on this? I use this as my...
Kiehl's?
No. It's like there's
it's
moisture.
It's like expensive though, right?
It's like $30 90, a bottle for the face cream.
I feel like any woman listening to this podcast would be like, $30 is expensive to you.
Any other dudes that spend that on face cream? I mean, you might.
No, I don't know. I just take whatever's nearby.
I cannot believe I'm blanking on this shit. Is it weird
that I don't wash my face?
You don't wash your face.
Your skin's been looking great.
I never wash my face.
Your face looks great. Your skin looks great.
No, but I'm doing treatments on my face.
What are you doing? Are you doing Botox?
No, not Botox. But Alex is part of this health place called Durand Health. And they do, it's called like vampire microneedling, PFP shit. I don't know what goes on. But they get like a needle. They put it all over my face.
Wow.
And they create like very tiny holes. And then when the skin heals. Apparently it repairs with better skin.
Wow.
And they also take my blood out of my arm.
What?
And then they shoot the plasma all over my face. They shake it up in this fancy machine.
This is the treatment. That's why his skin's been looking so good, man.
They shake up your own blood and squirt it all over your face.
Yes. And then that like coats my face, does something.
So if I were to lick your face right now, it would taste a little bit like blood.
There's only one way to find out.
The cream is Aveeno, by the way.
It's not some fancy.
The Aveeno face cream Aveeno is like, the it's like
I thought we made the same amount of money, Mike.
So anyway, but basically I'm not planning to do anything, which is a little terrifying because my dad, when he was like 60, used to get compared to Gilbert Godfrey. And no offense to Gilbert Godfrey, but if that's where I'm heading, that's just a scary proposition for Danica. But it's not really my problem because I'm out of the game.
You turned into Gilbert.
I don't know what's going to happen with my face as we age, but I don't want to be like, I don't want to be stressing it and I don't want to be chasing, but I feel like you guys maybe are open to the chase as Shane is getting blood spit on his face.
Yeah. I like to think I'm above all that shit.
Yeah.
But I would be very curious to know because I take Ash's advice for just about everything.
Yeah.
So Ash's
what's the advice? I want to know.
She just generally steers me in the right direction. Mm. And, but Ash also would be very sensitive to my feelings. And if she did have a good idea, Ash, would you be comfortable telling me? It's like, Max, it's time.
It's a tightrope walk.
Wow.
And Max, we got to send you to the doc. We got to send you to the clinic. When would that like dye my hair or hair implant or skin treatment or Ozempic? Like, which is it, you know? Mm.
How would you approach it? We need to hear it. Get on the mic.
I think I could just do it in a nice way. Mm. And I can make it fun. Mm. That's the thing because there'd be treats for sure. There is sometimes policing though, if it's like an event. I'm trying to remember, there's something in the arena the other day where you wanted, you were taking a shower, but you didn't have anything. And I was like, do you need shampoo? Because there's nothing in there. And you're like, no, I'm just going to use soap. And I'm like, you're going to wash your hair with soap?
Wow.
You're like, no, I just won't wash my hair today. So I'm always kind of just making sure.
Yeah, yeah. But if you hadn't questioned me, there's a chance that soap would have gone to my hair.
There'd just be soap in your hair and it all would have been flat.
Would you dye your hair if it went gray?
That's a great question. I don't think I could.
Me either.
Because that tightrope walk is so hard because I feel like, I don't know, a very small percentage of people can pull it off and you not realize their hair is dyed. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, you're just like, the guy's dyed his hair.
I kind of want a little gray hair.
I got a couple little grays coming in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A couple strands.
Yeah.
We were talking about this on the weekend, actually, the guys.
Does Populous dye his hair? Sometimes I feel like he has gray hair and sometimes he doesn't. What's he doing?
I think
he's pretty good at it if he is.
I think when he's got it cropped, I think he's got like the side dust is the thing. And I think when he's got it tight, because he shaves it tight, you don't see it.
I think he's dying.
I think he's dying. Yeah.
He could be.
But speaking of bods, I've been going to this dark hot Pilates class. I'm going,
this is what it's called, dark hot.
No, it's called Jaybird. It's in Toronto and Vancouver
to work out, or
it's a guided Pilates class, but it's hot, and I would have assumed that I hate it because it was because I don't like saunas.
Too much sweating for your liking.
Yeah, but I kind of like the sweating now because you do about 6 minutes of exercise and it feels like you've like run up a mountain. Like that's how much sweat you're producing. And there's music, there's tunes and stuff. And so I'm having a good time. The only problem is that you don't know what you're doing because it's all in the dark. There's just it's a candle lit. So you can't see anyone's face.
Wow.
But you can kind of hardly see your own body. So I wonder if the lights were turned on.
How many people in there?
I don't know, up to like 25 maybe.
Is there any concern of you letting one rip?
I thought about that, but so far so good.
Nice.
Yeah. But there's different instructors and I've become very judgmental on the instructors and like, because if you're leading one of those classes, it's this whole performance, right? Like the sound of your voice, the messages, because it's sort of like this meditation thing too. They're talking like you're meditating, but you're also kind of doing these rigorous exercises, but a lot of like kind of self-care speak.
Who's better at their job, your Pilates instructor or your high school DJ?
Ooh, the Pilates instructor for sure. But I've actually been thinking about using...
He also plays Good Riddance at the end of every Pilates session.
That would be at the end when you're cooling down, for sure.
I like it.
But I have been thinking about stealing some of their namastes, you know, for the Arkells live show. I'm learning something too. It's cool.
What does that mean?
You know, namaste.
I thought that's just what it is. That's the mantra.
Oh, but I mean that sort of figuratively. Like, I'm going to steal some of their mantras for an Arkells performance.
Got you.
Thank yourself. Thanks for showing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Back to the Grey Cup, baby. Oh yes. And so like I was in that situation where Mike D got tickets through Ash and then a few of us went, which was a great time. And we were tailgating before, which was hilarious. I was the only guy in Hamilton too that was like trying to find the Raptors were playing Detroit at 4 PM. So I was like, can we go to a bar that maybe has the Raps game on? Yeah. Blah blah blah. So we end up tailgating. It was a really fun time, but after Green Day played, we were kind of like, it's pretty cold, and do we just kind of want to like cut out and maybe watch the rest in a bar and have a, and so we ended up doing that, which I don't know if that will make people upset or not.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, but Green Day was it was cool.
How was it in the arena, in the stadium? Like, were people into it? Did it sound okay?
People were into it.
This is a televised thing.
Well, here's the thing, this was what was so impressive about you guys, because that was the last time the only time I'd been to a Grey Cup was when you guys played. You guys were so much more
dynamic,
involved. The performance was awesome for the people in the arena, but it also played at home. Like, there's just 10 times more things going on, whereas Green Day just showed up, played their three songs, and got the fuck out.
Yeah.
But I was very happy they played Basket Case.
Yeah.
You never know if they're going to do, like, or they're going to do what classic one they do. You don't know if they'll do, like, American Idiot.
Well, they played one off their new album, right?
They opened with the new one, I think.
And then Basket Dream Case. Is killing me.
Yeah. Which was whatever. And then what was the last song? I can't remember. But I just, when Basket Case came on, because that was such like a, I remember being like a little kid and loving that song. That song to me is still their best song that they've ever made.
Wait, how's that one?
Do you have the time?
Of course, yeah. We've covered that song.
It's so fucking good. But anyway, so I was just really happy they played that. And so it was a nice moment. And, but mostly, I was just there for the hang. So it was a good time.
Nice.
Where did you, what? You didn't watch it all? Shane?
I forgot it was the Grey Cup. No, I don't pay attention to that at all. Unless Arkells are playing the halftime show, I don't care.
I like it. Yeah.
So did you guys watch though in Toronto? Did you guys?
Yeah. We had a very chill night and just watched the halftime show. And then we watched The Curse.
Ooh, yo, good segue.
Nathan,
we're talking about that today.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I am the ignorant one. How many episodes into? I did
there's
see
only
a funny,
two episodes.
That's it?
No, yeah. There's six episodes in total.
No, but they've only released two.
Okay, two.
So I can catch. I'll catch up for the next chat about this. So feel free to get crazy with the spoilers. But I did see somebody post today that it's got like a 94% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but a 23% audience rating.
Interesting.
So kind of a good sign, though.
For art or the future interpretation of
like
the masses,
a person
asses,
who considers herself higher than the average person.
Yes, we call that the Adam Sandler Will Ferrell.
Yeah, if it's a pure like Dumb and Dumber MacGruber-esque comedy, I want the perfect aggregate for critics is probably 45%, and then you want like 80% audience. To me, that's perfect for a comedy. Something like the Nathan Fielder thing, I think it's so different that you want high critical praise. And then low audience understanding, especially if it's only one episode been released.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this show is a grower with a payoff.
Yeah.
That's why Mike scared me a little bit, because he said a critic that he follows
I think is a fantastic critic.
It was like less than positive about the series. But then we found out he only saw one episode. So
have you? And he's a big Nathan Fielder fan and a Safdie fan.
Oh, interesting. Oh, he is.
He loves like John Wilson. Like, Steppenwolf's a great critic, and he's, so anyway, when he was kind of like, the show isn't quite doing this, but it's doing this, and Nathan, but he said Nathan Fielder was able to hold his own next to Emma Stone, so that, to Shane's point, I thought he'd seen the whole series, but then I went back and looked, and he hadn't, so.
Shane, what do you think so far?
So I watched it twice. Wow. So my first viewing, I consciously did something I never do, which is I watched it as a second screen. So I focused-
On the first viewing?
My first viewing. I can do shit like this. Like Mike could tell me the ending of a movie and it will not ruin the experience for me to watch it.
Wow.
It's just, I don't know why, but it doesn't bother me.
Is this a Ritalin thing?
I don't, it's just how I am. I don't know. But I got back from New York. I'm exhausted. I'm in no mood to actually pay attention, but I'm also too excited to watch the show. So I know I have to watch it, but I don't have the brain power to pay attention. I know this is kind of a challenging series. So I go, I'm going to scroll and watch at the same time, paying more attention to my phone, kind of half paying attention just so it can, you know, itch my curiosity of just knowing what the show's about. So I watched the first episode that way. And in that viewing, I thought, okay, this show might be a little bit disappointing. And then a week goes by and then I watched it with Alex and I had about 25% of a weed drink this time, but 100%
weed drink,
25% of a weed drink, but 100% invested in the show. And it blew me away.
I
thought it was amazing. The tone of it. I can't believe Nathan Fielder's such a good director. Because it felt like actually a Safdie brother did it.
Well, Safdie brothers are heavily involved, right?
They are. But yeah. Nathan directed it.
But the editing, I'm sure, isn't, you know. Like it's
I'm sure it didn't hurt. But
because
the
music and the soundtrack is so Safdie brothers. Yes. Like everything about it is so Safdie brothers. It's so cool. Yes. Once you have a signature style and you just lean into that thing, not to say that they don't have like a diverse skill set, but like, you know, that like electronic sound, like that score that is in all this Safdie brother stuff. It's in this too. And it immediately gives it a vibe.
Yeah. Is it a menacing vibe? Is it like a foreboding?
Unsettling.
Vibe?
Unsettling.
Sort of. Yeah. Like, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. It's like hipster, unsettling, hipster Radiohead. And it's very slow, purposely slow and unfolding. And, you know, it's basically Nathan and Emma Stone, they work for like an HGTV style reality show series.
They're gentrifiers. They're going into a town outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the entire community is like working class Mexican Americans. And so it's like they're revealed to be like they have some good intentions, but they're also just completely in it for themselves. And they have an odd relationship. So like they get into the nitty gritty, and there's a penis scene that we've been discussing.
Is it Nathan Fielder's penis?
I don't think so, because it's quite small. Penis did it. But
in the group text, you were like, Alex intentionally didn't laugh at the scene where he has this micro penis because she was worried about offending me, which it was also more insulting as a result.
She didn't laugh because Alex, when a penis is on the screen, Alex can't help but laugh. She always makes a noise. It goes, and we have to rewind it or something. So she doesn't make a noise or anything or do anything. So I go, did you see that? She goes, no. I rewind it. I go, and then she doesn't, She's like, what? Is that weird? And I'm like, yeah, like that's really small, I think. But what I, so I think, because you know how we talk about dick out dads?
Yeah.
I'm not a dick out person around my wife or relationship. Mm. I only like.
So your penis is even out like flaccid around your wife?
Never flaccid. No one can ever see it flaccid. I'm just, I don't do that. You know, sometimes Alex will cover up her chest too if she's walking around. I'm like, why are you doing that? Because sometimes she doesn't care. Sometimes she does. But all the time I care. I never go dick out walking around the house, anything. But so she is maybe assuming maybe that's how it shrivels up and looks.
Oh, so she's only seen it at its most large state.
It's most large, but maybe she's like, oh, maybe it shrivels up very small. Cause I'm always talking about, like, I guess as a self-defense mechanism, like, oh, I'm not big, you know, like, you know? So maybe she's like, oh, maybe that's what you look like. But I just want everyone to know I'm much bigger than what Nathan is in that series.
Noted.
But are you guys dick out around your significant other? Like comfortably?
No, I usually.
You're not either.
No, I like a little underwear on there.
Yeah, okay. So you seem shocked, Mike.
I am nude around my wife, for
sure. You're nude around her?
Yeah. I feel bad for her. I get to look at Masterpiece, and she's got to look at this E.T. in the corner with his shirt off.
That joke never fails. That's like,
it's my go-to, baby.
It's the best.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, but back to the show. So Nathan, you know, it's funny, when I started watching it, I was like, oh, is this going to be revealing of Nathan? Because it doesn't have the same je ne sais quoi perfect character that Nathan for you had. Because I didn't even finish the rehearsal
episode one was the best, and then it fell off.
See, I didn't even like episode one that much.
You didn't? No. Okay.
So like it was all just too uncomfortable for me, and I really love Nathan for you. So I was like, is this not going to work? Is he going to be revealed to be sort of a one-trick pony? But then once he sort of settles into it, by the end of episode two, you're like, oh, he's fucking awesome. And it's actually a perfect combination to be working with the Safdies. And also Emma Stone is a perfect like partner foil.
But it's only the one Safdie. The other one's out.
Oh, really?
Something happened between Benny and Josh.
Really?
There was a controversy or something and they split.
They both produced the show?
I don't think so.
Maybe they something developed it together happened. So you get to keep your name on it, but they don't work together, I don't think, anymore.
So anyway, so I'm impressed by Nathan. Like, it's...
I got to watch these two now.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, it's totally its own thing. I can't really think of anything else that it's like. Yeah.
That's cool.
Have you guys seen The Killers of the Flower Moon?
No. But my brother-in-law went. He did invite me, but I just didn't have time. Is it good?
Yeah.
I heard it's great.
It's great.
It's such a sad, fucking depressing story, though.
No, but you know, I'm the most sensitive to that kind of thing. Yeah. I don't want to say anything that's depressing. And I went in knowing that it's a hard subject matter, but the performance is so good. It doesn't feel like 3.5 hours because everyone's like, and because there's been a lot of long movies lately and you feel it, especially in the last 45 minutes. Like even Oppenheimer, I was like, okay, let's go. But this one just kind of kept moving. And judging by the trailer, I was like, why do I want to watch this? And I was like, and I want Leo to look kind of good, and Leo looks kind of crazy in this movie.
Well, his ears, they give him stick out ears.
Teeth are terrible too. But it's a really fascinating story. Scorsese's great. The soundtrack, very subtle, but really moves it along. And Robbie Robertson from the band did it.
That's his last role?
Yeah. No, yeah. Before he passed away. Yeah, he did it. Actually, the crazy thing about this movie, and this is a very sort of niche musician thing, but throughout the movie, you're like, wait a second. Is that who I think it is? So in the movie, Jason Isbell, who is a like a renowned country singer-songwriter.
But he's like popular on Twitter, right?
He's popular on Twitter because like he talks a country lot guy. Of shit. Yeah, he's a progressive guy who literally just pokes at rednecks right. the entire day. It's a, to be honest,
kind of, that's his crowd because he's a country guy. That's
his crowd. He has an yeah. NPR lefty crowd, right. but he's from Alabama and right. he's like sort of that community as well. So he just pokes at people on Twitter. It's a little strange to me, but he's in it and does a good job.
Acting?
Yeah, he acts. He's one of the starring roles in it. Okay. He's in it. There's another guy who's rolling around in one of the cars. I'm like, who is that? That guy looks so familiar. Is he a comedian? Is he like, how do, is he an actor that's been in some other TV show? Sturgill Simpson. He's a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, he's playing on SNL.
Yeah, you're right. He's playing on SNL. And he's sort of like a left-of-center country singer. Then there's another scene, and you see the guy's face for a second. I'm like, is that who I think it is? And then he finally comes back like 10 minutes later. Pete Yorn. Do you remember Pete Yorn?
He's been on our podcast.
Yeah.
Of course
you know Pete Yorn. Question about being handsome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Pete Yorn's in the movie. Yeah. And then at the very end, Jack White is in the movie. And so it's like Scorsese or whoever's casting. It's like, I was like, where's my fucking call?
Right.
Right? It's like, that makes me want to act. Do you think I can act? Yeah, I could be a good actor.
You could act in a comedy, I think.
Yeah, not a serious role.
I don't know if you could do. I think you could do anything. Yeah, I think you could do it.
You can do anything you put your mind to, Max.
Ash, you think I could get an acting career going?
I don't think you have time.
If I had time,
I think you just can't do other stuff.
Yeah,
being on set would be so boring.
Yeah, maybe you could be on camera if you got a little work done on your face. I think that. I think you need to test it in a video. Do an earnest acting role in a video.
Like a music video.
Like, yeah, like one of your music
videos.
But
that's so corny.
I know, but that's how you're going to find out. Huh. I guess that's a high, that's probably more risk than reward.
Yeah, maybe.
Ash is nodding her head.
Yeah, maybe cast me in something.
What is a movie that a singer has acted in or like an artist has acted in?
Dylan was in that cop show for a very long time.
No, but I mean like someone that's been in a music video where it's like the protagonist is played by the singer. Taylor, I guess, did it. No, she cast Sadie Sink in All Too Well. Like she
acts and stuff all the time. And she's is she good? But we can't even say that, else we'll get fucking canceled.
Oh yeah, no. Swifties by the Swifties. I'm just trying to. I feel like there's probably obvious ones we're not thinking of.
The best one is The Weeknd in Uncut Gems.
The Weeknd in Uncut Gems.
Yeah, but those are like movie roles. I can think of a bunch of people movie
roles.
Wait,
he sucks, doesn't he? Doesn't The Weeknd?
He sucks now. The Idol.
Right. He was good in Uncut
Gems. Only stuck to him. Everybody else.
He played himself
fine,
in Uncut Gems.
I didn't think he was good.
I'm also a believer that if you're working with a good editor and a good director, anybody can be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like The Weeknd's kind of great in the Safdie Brothers thing because he's in a scene with Adam Sandler. He's in a dark nightclub. It's just set up in the right way.
A lot of acting, it seems, is like this indefinable thing. It's like the ability to remember lines and then have a certain amount of charisma that can come across on camera.
Yeah.
And then
I have it.
Yeah. You do naturally have a certain. The only question would be, would you get in your own head about line delivery or how you say a certain word? Or
probably.
Whatever?
I probably would.
No, you wouldn't. You don't care.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, there's so many times where I'm reading the paper in the morning. I'm like, oh, this would be a funny.
I like that you still read physical newspapers too. You're the only guy I know that does that. And
you know,
I like it.
You know what else does?
I would do it.
Tom Power. Tom Power gets the Globe and Mail every
Who
day.
Did it and first?
We just discovered this on the weekend. Wow. We were hanging out and he's like, you get the paper.
It's
like,
funny if you met at the newsstand.
you too? But he won up me. He gets the New York Times on Sunday. I don't even do that. I was like, fuck, man. There's one guy who won up me. He also, by the way, said Shane. He said, that guy is devilishly handsome.
Wow.
Oh,
Tom Power.
I like that.
Yeah. But I think
he's like blood treatment.
Yeah, we should just tell him. It's not all natural, let me tell you. Or I guess it kind of is if it's your own blood. But
another controversial statement.
Right. But the thing that I've been thinking about lately is it's like if to be a comedian or to be somebody and not be completely afraid all the time is you have to just kind of stay off the internet. You have to not look at what anybody says about you ever.
Yeah.
And I think about that with Matt Healy, who I think is on the internet all the time and he just kind of deals with it. But also like Nathan Fielder or Tim Robinson. We asked Tom Power and he said, oh yeah, apparently Tim Robinson doesn't do a lot of press. He's kind of an anxious person. And it's like, why bother? I don't know. I just think there's something to that. I'm just like, I don't know.
Well, when Healy gets in trouble or criticized, doesn't he say it was performance art?
Yeah.
That's a good move.
Yeah, well, because he loves Andy Kaufman. He actually, I remember him having like a Instagram story thing. This is like a year and a half ago or something, where he's like, people think that like this is my hero, and it's like a picture of David Bowie, but it's like, this is actually my hero. It's like Andy Kaufman, and he just goes through a long line of like legendary comedians. Like, that's what he loves.
And you think he's cool, not eye roll worthy?
I think he's the coolest.
Would I like him?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm. And it's also because he tries so fucking hard. Like his live show is more like kind of thoughtful and theatrical. And this is up my alley, but like, you know how like everyone points to David Byrne, Talking Heads, and the documentary Stop Making Sense is like, mm-hmm. this, like, oh my God, they're dancing, they're acting, there's props, all that stuff. Like, he's from that school. And when I saw them in 2019, he had two backup dancers, these twin girls, and he did like Michael Jackson level dancing with them. This tour, he's not doing that at all, but he just has all these tricks up his sleeve. And he's not only like kind of a great, eloquent, funny talker, but he's also just, the show itself is like, they built this whole house, and the show is about sort of like the inside, like domestic life and what you do kind of by yourself. And, so each band member is kind of coming onto the stage at the top of the show, and on the screens, they have it like it's like the opening of a 90s sitcom. Mm. It's like starring Matt Healy, and Matt Healy walks through the door in real time.
People love that
bit. And they go to each member of the band and people cheer, and they have like their names on it. It's very good.
And he has a body double who's naked.
Yeah.
And he dances around him.
Yeah. So basically there's a part in the show where there's a B stage, and it's quite high. So if you're on the floor, it's probably 10 feet in the air, so you can't really see it. And there's a trap door in the B stage, and it becomes illuminated. And it's a kind of a thing of grass. And then it's revealed that there is a life-size body double of him lying down, kind of like sleeping, or looks kind of dead, but you see his penis.
Wow.
And then he kind of like lies next to it and examines it and smacks his ass and
interacts
with it.
How big was the penis compared to Nathan Fielder's?
I think that's what I asked.
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit bigger.
No. In the chat group, I was asking how big it was.
That's funny.
Yeah.
By the way, the songs are excellent. His live show is fucking excellent. And his sort of like interest in being sort of like part of a conversation, and I don't think he does it to be provocative for provocative sake. I think he's just like, he talks, I think, and he offers opinions that most people offer if they weren't on a microphone.
Weren't they just here?
They just played on Saturday.
No, but I mean, like, I feel like I just saw them on Instagram and everybody was at the show.
Yeah, they played. It was like a kind of a...
He was like, spin wine at people, you said.
Yeah, it was a follow-up tour.
Oh.
So they did like the first leg of the tour. It all blew out. And that was a year ago. Now they're doing a kind of a victory lap now.
Interesting. Just raking in that cash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
It was Scotiabank?
Yeah.
Sold out?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And then they did like London, Ontario. That was sold out too.
Man.
I'm sure.
There you have it.
Did you guys see The Killer, David Fincher's movie?
Not yet.
Oh, it's so good.
It's good?
I like it.
Wow. Are you a Fincher guy?
Love Fincher. Who doesn't love Fincher?
I would think not. I would think you would think it was too graphic or something. Like, yeah, I don't like blood, you know?
No. That's my character when I'm acting.
Yeah. Yeah, you do a lot of that. You don't know you do that?
Yeah, I guess I do that. People say that about me.
But is it graphic?
There's one great fight scene and there's some like gun stuff, but it's not too bad.
So when you asked in our group if there was any good movies to see, that's what you ended up watching.
I think so.
Nice. Okay.
No, we'd already watched it. Oh, we saw some, we tried to start watching some like Julianne Moore movie, Sharper or something, or what was it called? We watched 10 minutes and I was forget about it.
Hmm. What was I doing the other day? I was doing something and I was like, oh, I'm going to throw something on and whatever. I was like, oh, Blue Beetle's out. Do I really want to sit through Blue Beetles? And then I was like, everyone keeps saying John Wick 4 is good. And I was planning to kind of watch 25 minutes of something just while I ate lunch. And I was just about to do, I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes on Blue Beetle, looked up the Rotten Tomatoes on John Wick, and I was going to do John Wick, but then just as I was about to click it, I saw this Gerard Butler movie called Plane. Yeah. Mm. Have you guys seen this movie? And I was like,
you like it, right?
I
want to
watch
it. I'm like, listen, like a well-done like plane crash scene, whatever. I'm like, that is worth the price of admission. So if I can get to that point and then bail, that'll be perfect for this 30 minutes I'm planning to have something up while I eat. And I'm sitting through all of Plane, which was like completely one of those types of movies that is like they make it, it's perfectly serviceable, and it was fine. But I actually did, speaking of something that I think is really cool, I've only watched the first two episodes, much like you guys with The Curse, mm-hmm. is there's a new show out on Disney Plus called A Murder at the End of the World.
Ooh.
And it's done by Britt Marling, who did the OA and The Sound of My Voice and Another Earth. She's like a really interesting sort of creator. She works with a partner. I'm blanking on his name right now, but they sort of write a bunch of stuff. That Netflix show kind of went off the rails, but I'm a fan of her work in general. This one is about Emma Corwin, who played the Princess Diana, the young Princess Diana for two seasons on The Crown. They star in this thing as like a young hacker. And they get invited to this like crazy Icelandic hotel that is super isolated. And Clive Owen is like a mix of Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs. He's this sort of multi-billionaire that assembles the most interesting people in the world, like someone that's been an astronaut, an astrophysicist, like artists, all these things. And there's like a Banksy type that the Emma Corwin character used to date. And they all get assembled here. It's two episodes in, and it's basically a whodunit. It's kind of Agatha Christie, but it's like it's like hip, and it's kind of like cool.
I'm watching it.
And weird. And the Clive Owen
character
is really
good. I'm watching it.
It's only two episodes. So it's three episodes now.
It's not sci-fi, though, is it?
Nope.
Thank God.
That's
where we don't get along.
It's like a whodunit. I know. We don't connect there, but that's fine. We have many other places that we do connect. But anyway, so I the first two are great. I'll watch the third one when I get home tonight. I think Britt Marling is, at least her work, is always interesting enough to watch. Mm-hmm. But that kind of got my space and my time before The Curse. But I'm now throwing The Curse into the rotation the way you guys are speaking about
you
it.
You just reminded me of something I wanted to talk about. The Beatles came out with another song.
Oh, yeah. Yes. We didn't talk about this.
Yes. Let's talk about
our
most beloved band.
Because it feels like we've talked about it a lot, but just via text.
We've had so many conversations. Yeah. There's like, me and Max back and forth. We have a text with my brother, Matt Savelli, who's a huge George Harrison fan.
Okay, tell me if I'm wrong.
Go for it.
Their early stuff is better than that.
Like their entire catalog?
Yeah, like anything pre-1970?
That's not a great song.
Well,
historically,
I mean, like, don't get us started. Like,
wait, is that a good song?
No. We could talk about this for a long time. Do you want to know the backstory on how the whole thing came together?
Like before he died, you know, had this song on a demo. Uh-huh. He leaves his house. He gets shot. Then
they're
like, we're going to clean this up.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to clean the, they clean up the blood and all that.
Yeah,
but then when they find the demo, they say, we need the technology to be good enough where we can actually make this.
This might
song.
Be my favorite subject in human history.
Wow.
This very thing we're talking about.
Am I getting it right so far?
You're getting it right so far. But what makes it interesting, and Mike, jump in wherever I'm getting this wrong. So the Beatles break up in 1970. 1994, the three remaining Beatles get together and they're kind of going through old B-sides and stuff. And they're going to put together this anthology series of never heard music for their fans.
Yeah.
They decide to go into the John Lennon demo vault and record some songs where the three remaining Beatles play over a John Lennon song.
Yoko reached out to Paul and that's she gave him a cassette.
That Bluebird song?
Well, so they had a song Free as a Bird and Real Love, which in my mind are two of the greatest Beatles songs of
all
fantastic.
Time. They're fantastic.
I agree. Those are good songs.
And they're so... It just kind of represents what makes the Beatles so special because once they all went on their solo careers, they had great moments, but they didn't have that push and pull. And like, cause where Paul can be a little too saccharine and John can get a little lazy. It's like when they're together, they kind of even each other out and George's parts, everything. So those two songs turned out amazing. And we have discussed this in our group chat, like ad nauseum, because there's this whole backstory where basically George Harrison kind of only agreed to be a part of that new session because they brought in Jeff Lynne, who's the singer of ELO. Do you know ELO?
No.
You know, Evil Woman.
Don't bring me down. Electric Light Orchestra. They're a big British band in the 70s.
Okay. They kind of sound like the Beatles.
Yep.
And then he ended up being in a band with Harrison and Bob Dylan called the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
And Tom Petty too.
Yep.
And so Harrison goes, I will agree to do this new session. It's 1994. If my guy gets to produce, because I'm not going to have Paul come in here and bully everybody around. Cause I fucking, the undertone is basically like, Paul is so fucking annoying and I'll only do it if I feel like I'm being represented and I only really trust Jeff Lynne. Paul goes, okay, sure. Whatever. If that makes you happy, bring him in. So Jeff Lynne gets to produce those two songs and they turn out fucking amazing. There is a third song
that they started working on. There's three parts of the anthology. So the original plan was part one comes out and you release Free as a Bird. That closes anthology disc one.
That one's the big hit.
Disc two closes with Real Love. Disc three was
which is also amazing. It's hard
Real
to say what's better. Like I kind of might even like Real Love.
I think Real Love's the best of the three.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the third anthology, it's a three-part series, was supposed to end with Now and Then. There was a fourth song called Grow Old With Me that John did on the demos, but they released that on Milk and Honey, which was his posthumous record, whatever. So they were like, let's not do Grow Old With Me because that would had been released in the early 80s or mid 80s, sorry. So they started work on Now and Then. And this is the part that's a little bit up for debate.
This is the best part. This is the best
part. It's basically they do about 2 days on it or something. And George is like, there's a documentary where Paul talks about this. And George basically is like, no, this is fucking shit. We're not doing this. I'm like, let's shut it down. Paul's like, no, but it's John. And George is like, I don't care who it is. It's still rubbish. Like, it's still shit.
Yeah.
What people don't know is if George was talking about the quality of the song or the quality of the demo.
Of the demo.
We can't separate the voice from the piano on the demo. That's the problem. And that's the sort of story they're saying now. George was always into the song, but he didn't want to put out something subpar quality. Peter Jackson's technology now allows us to separate John's voice from the piano. Yeah. And it does sound great. What we've been saying is now they need to go back and do the voice from Free as a Bird, which sounds weird, and Real Love. Both of those are very low.
They didn't even bother me that much.
A Yak Back cell.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So if they can put that through the Peter Jackson thing and then release all three of them as this tight little package, it would be incredible.
Yeah.
That quality kind of gave it something.
I'm not as yearning.
But they're remastering things all the time. So give us the remastered.
Every time I think it's remastered, I don't even really hear a difference. But it's so funny because now that Harrison died in 2003, I think.
2001.
So Paul doesn't have to deal with Harrison or have the producer. Paul's just like, okay, I'm going back.
It's my time, baby.
It's not my time. And Paul, in describing the project this year, he's like, you know, it's a Beatles song because Ringo's drumming on it right now. I'm playing on it. And George, he hears guitar and I laid down a George-like guitar solo.
A tribute. Yeah, in honor of George.
But like knowing how the song is and everybody kind of agreeing that it's not a great song, you can only assume that George is not talking about the quality of the song, of the quality of the recording. He's talking about the quality of the song.
It's just not a good song.
But it's just a great example of George kind of having none of it and Paul just can't, like, not be able to help himself, right?
Well, everyone's like,
kind of just like speaks to their personalities.
Everyone's like, where's George playing if Paul's doing the solo? It's like, well, I'm assuming he's that acoustic guitar off the top. I'm like, but I wouldn't trust Paul. We're assuming George's guitar is somewhere on that track. And I think it's probably the acoustic guitar on the top, like the rhythm guitar.
Yeah, and it's like doubled with Paul's, and Paul's is probably way louder and you don't hear George's anymore.
All that stuff, yeah. I just wish, the song is fine. I was kind of hoping, I was saying this, like, I think this, like, I'm happy to have it for sure. It does feel like a Beatles song and it's cool that they're back in the news cycle and they got a number one in the UK, like the longest sort of stretch between a number one and, you know, something like 50 years or something like that. Like, it's just cool to see them sort of still relevant and being acknowledged as the greatest band in the history of sort of pop music and all this stuff. I just was hoping that Paul McCartney had one last cool collaboration in him. Because I was like, take John's like bits that you like and then Paul, like, write some killer middle eight or a killer chorus or something. And then like, kill the harmonies, you know, like really get in there. But it's like, oh no, Paul's got like an 80-year-old voice. He's not like, he's singing with his 80-year-old voice on a demo of John when John is 40, you know? And it's like, it's just, so anyway, I was expecting to like go to a 10 and it never really got past a 6.5.
Yeah, I feel like it could be a TikTok thing. It's like, write a better middle eight, because basically the middle section of the song Paul wrote and like they played over. So it's like, could you write a better part?
Yeah, I don't think I got that far, but I thought it was going to be good. I thought you guys were actually going to like it too.
I like it just fine. But have you seen the music video? Because that's a whole other thing.
Oh, yeah.
So then Peter Jackson is going to do the music video. And I will say, this has become a weird sort of like delineation between, I think, boomer, like old fans and like people that maybe have like a sense of whatever. But so Peter Jackson, in teasing this whole rollout, it's like the song will come out this day. The music video by Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson does all these interviews, Rolling Stone everywhere. He's like, we have footage of the Beatles that has never been seen. We went and found Pete Best, who was the Beatles' original drummer. He had the only known footage of them performing in their leather suits in the Cavern Club. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so jacked for like 2 weeks. Like I'm streaming ITV interviews in the UK of them talking about this shit live, like at my house. So I'm so excited. Song comes out. I'm like, okay, you know, it's good. I wanted it to go somewhere. It was fine like that. But we still got the video. I want to feel. He's like, and Peter Jackson's like, you're going to cry. But the Beatles were funny people. So you get, you know, they were a bit reverent. So you got to have a little bit of that too. The first cut was too somber. So we really did something special and get ready to watch it. I'm like, all right, Kate. So Friday comes along. Throw this video on. And Shane, you got to see this video because I'd love to know your thoughts. But oh, here we go.
What the? Oh my God.
Basically, Peter just made a bunch of choices. So they got all this footage from the 94 sessions, which they've like upscaled. So like the quality is pretty good. So I'm like, all right. Yeah. Like, okay, starting off good. This is kind of cool. And then I'm like, what the fuck? We're doing, okay, we're doing an overlay. That's the first choice where I got a little confused.
Yeah, like John's looking at the group.
I guess it's like
younger, in his younger days.
And then suddenly I'm like, oh, okay. We're doing the old like country guy yelling with the cowboy hat.
I don't think they're in the same room.
No. Ringo, who never sang a harmony on anything in his life, now all of a sudden is at the mics. I like this shot of George. I've never seen that before. This is the kind of fun stuff I thought I'd be seeing. And then, okay.
That is crazy.
We got the ghosts of John and George.
But that head is not even attached to that body.
It's like Sgt. Pepper's George with 1994 George in the same room.
TikTok technology. This is crazy.
So this is the Hello Goodbye video.
Oh, yeah.
And what he found was Peter Jackson found unseen outtakes. You know, B-cam.
We've all seen it.
We've seen the video, which is essentially that. You're just seeing different versions of them dancing, and then he puts Ringo in back in 1968 or whatever.
They're all yucking it
up. The way the body's moving on John Lennon is so weird and not connected to the head properly.
It's so weird.
Oh, George's head's weird too. Oh, that freaks me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very bad.
So anyway, I was just like, wow, I guess this was a...
Well, it just reminded me of the thing that happens where you put these people on a pedestal and you're like, okay, Peter Jackson, like Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
Like he's going to create these like amazing worlds. It's like, then he makes this like documentary.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. It's amazing. But then you're like, oh, your skill set doesn't necessarily translate into music videos. Like you just don't have it. And sometimes when I hear like Bill Simmons talk about the music industry or something, like somebody who you think is like smart and then they try to do something else. And you're like, oh, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like you sound like you're equally as self-assured, but you like don't know anything about the music industry. Same thing with Peter Jackson. It's like, oh, okay. He was in this like, you know, rare
air. But also, it's been like 20 something years since Lord of the Rings.
But he was such a master with the doc that came out. You know, it really felt like he could do anything.
That kind of storytelling he can do. I guess he thought that sticking these like,
wait, the Beatles doc was storytelling? It was just them in the room eating toast.
I think a lot of choices had to be made.
But that's just editing choices. Like that's just editing. Cleaning up the footage, restoration he's good at, and he chopped out some shit, but that was still 9 hours long. For you guys, that was riveting. A lot of people, that was tough to watch.
Well, speaking of the way different people receive things, if you read the comments on that music video, like the boomers love it. I bawled my eyes out. Yeah. It was great to see all four of them back together. You know, you got this old footage of John and George from the Hello Goodbye video, these outtakes, them dancing. You're sticking with Paul and Ringo. I was like, this is the cheesiest shit I ever saw in my life.
Well, that's like Facebook brought to life that video.
Yeah. So there you go.
But yeah, I wonder like right now, how old's Michael Jordan?
Born in 63. It's 2003.
He's 50.
So he's 60.
No, he's 60. You're right. Yeah. Because he retired at 40.
I was born in 83, so he's 20 years older. We could probably beat him at 1-on-1 right now.
What?
We could probably beat Jordan at 1-on-1.
Whoa.
That's a good question.
I think Peter Jackson's brain isn't as sharp. And we expect him to be Lord of the Rings Peter, but he's just old Facebook Peter right now.
That's what the episode's called. Yeah.
Old Facebook Peter. Well, there you have it. So what's the review of the song as we wrap up and say goodbye?
Solid 6.5.
Chills though when you listen to it for the first time.
No,
I feel like Mike got chills.
The first verse, I was saying, I think the verse is great. Like the it's all true. I think that piano piece and John's melody is really good there, and then it loses the plot. And they cut out some from the original demo that I thought was really good too. And the chorus I dislike, it's unremarkable. Mm-hmm. So I'm with Max, 6.57 maybe, but happy it exists.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not one of the people that's like just leave the past in the past. I'm like fuck it, let's try it.
Was that an imitation of Paul there?
Okay. Leave the past in the past. But I think Greg's quote was George Harrison was right. You know what I mean? Basically, it's the song's rubbish.
Wow.
Where do you give it?
I think it's a shit song. You have to unearth it, though. And I think it kind of has awesome historical value.
Yes.
Yeah. I am very grateful because a lot of that tea that came out after the fact about George Harrison not really liking the song and having brought in Jeff Lynne for the original sessions, people clipped. It was a documentary about Jeff Lynne and ELO. So I would have never known that dynamic because I knew he was a part of those early sessions, but I didn't realize why. Because I just assumed that he would be friends with Paul.
Or they would just let George Martin do it, who's still around.
Yeah. And so I like all of the conversation it's enabled, especially like in our group chats. Like that's so fun. It's great.
Nice.
Most interesting band in the world, man. 60 years later.
Yep.
All right, that's it. That's all. That is our episode. Thank you so much to Nathan Nash for doing everything that he does. The great, great Nate. And also manager Ash, who got on the mic today, which is great. We got a lot going on in this episode. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Fellas, it was a great hang. Maybe the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.